Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Constitutionalist. I am one of your hosts, Jeremy Johnson. If it sounds like I'm out of breath, I am. I just got back into town and I ran up my stairs as fast as I could, and I opened the door with 30 seconds left before the show started. So, hey, I'm here. I'm also here with the chair of the Constitutional Republic Party and the other host of this show, of the Constitutionalist, called, and his, they call him Bull. His name is Travis Bull Johnson. Travis, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, man. And, glad you made it. Yeah, we were going back and forth today, and at first I wasn't sure if I was going to be starting off the show while waiting for him to get upstairs, but he managed to beat the time, so to speak, and I'm glad, but I'm really looking forward to continuing on this conversation we started last week.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought we'd do is touch base with introduce the 15th Amendment and then carry on between the 14th and the 15th Amendment, because there ain't too much to the 15th Amendment of what I read. Doesn't mean I'm right, but I think we can incorporate the 14th and the 15th in this conversation tonight, don't you, Bull?
Oh, I actually have to refresh my own memory on it, but yeah, that should be fine.
Yeah, I forgot that we're going to do a part two, so I set the show up that we're going to do the 15th Amendment, because it's episode number 15. Basically, what the 15th Amendment is it gave black African-American males voting rights. People get that confused. Oh, African-Americans got voting rights. No, not off the 15th Amendment. Women's voting rights didn't come until, I think, somewhere around 1920. But this did give African males voting rights, according to the 15th Amendment. So I'm going to let Bull, but we can get to that. I know Bull had some stuff you want to talk about the 14th Amendment, so I'm just going to mute my phone while I get myself settled here so I'm not huffing and puffing in here like a marathon runner. And I'll be back here shortly. But I'll let Bull just take over, and I will talk to you guys here in a few minutes.
All right. Thanks, Jeremy. Again, we covered the 14th a little bit last week, and the 14th is just such a wide-ranging amendment. I mean, there's five different sections to the 14th Amendment, and one that gets talked about a lot, of course, is the one that they call it the equal, it's covered under what they call it the Equal Protection Clause. And it basically states, as we said last week, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction of thereof shall not be deprived of any life, liberty, or property without due process of the law, nor to deny any person within its jurisdiction equal protection of the laws. When we talk about equal protection of the laws, one of the consequences on that, or one of the effects of that portion of the 14th Amendment, was that, remember, from the very beginning, the Constitution was meant to restrict the federal government. It was never meant to restrict state government. It was only to pertain to the federal government when it talked about the rights, therefore, and the Bill of Rights. Those were all just to limit the federal government. So originally, and one example of this is the federal government was not allowed to pass any laws to limit your ability to own or purchase a firearm. But states could. Because again, Second Amendment at that point only pertained to the federal government. Well, once they passed the amendment, it says that not deny any person within its jurisdiction equal protection of the laws. That basically meant that if you were living in one state compared to another state, they couldn't be any different as far as the protection to you, as far as the rights protected under the Constitution. So basically at that point, the states were held accountable to the Bill of Rights. And again, that wasn't always the case. That was not the original intent of the founders. Again, the original intent of the founders was specifically to restrict the federal government. Well, again, the 14th Amendment basically took a lot of this power away from the states and put it and gave it back to the federal government. You go further into this by looking at Section 5 of the 14th Amendment. Section 5 states that Congress shall have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article. And otherwise, in order to enforce anything that would fall under any of these other four sections, Congress could pass a law and hold the states to it. Again, this before, that wasn't necessarily the situation. Before, the situation was basically, if it wasn't covered under the Constitution, that right was reserved to the states, period. Well, this opened up a whole new area where the federal government can get involved. And we've seen it. I mean, the Voting Rights Act was a prime example, which was a good thing. I mean, because, again, it protected the people's rights to vote, and it made sure that states with a history could not necessarily find ways around that to disenfranchise people based off of their race or their color. So that was a good thing because, let's face it, I mean, at one point in time, a lot of the states were kind of like, you know, we're going to do our own thing, and we don't care about your rights because the Bill of Rights didn't really affect us. Or didn't really pertain to them at that time. So that's why I think this is one of the amendments that was the farthest reaching as far as growing the power of the federal government. One of the issues we're dealing with today, or we hear about the 14th quite often right now, has to do with Section 3. No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector, a president, vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or any other state who hasn't previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislator or an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, to have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. But Congress may vote by 2/3 of each house to remove such disability. Now, what I find unique about it is it actually kind of contradicts the first Section 1, which was equal protection of the laws. Because, I mean, in theory, this section is only held accountable to people who have already served in office, or in the military, or anything that would have required them to swear an oath to the United States. So if Joe Blow, regular American, did something that would be considered insurrection or rebellion, then guess what? Under this section, they can actually run for office and hold office because they had not taken that oath previously. Where a case where we have right now with former President Donald Trump is he has taken that oath as the former president. So he's actually held to a different standard than just a Joe Blow American is compared to this particular section of the 14th Amendment. Now, what is engaging in insurrection or rebellion? I mean, that's going to be the magic question when it comes to whether this specific section can allow President Trump not to be included in the ballots. Right now, there's a case in Colorado, I believe, that is being allowed to move forward claiming that President Trump violated this portion of the Constitution and therefore should not be able to be included on the ballot in Colorado for president. How this is going to play out, honestly, I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting, especially when we look at the cases right now in Georgia, where so far I believe three of President Trump's former attorneys have pled guilty and agreed to turn state evidence against other people who are being charged with racketeering and election fraud in Georgia. And the names like Jenna Ellis, who pled guilty, I think, today. And I mean, this was a close advisor of President Trump when it
so
came
did
down
Mark
to,
Meadows.
Yeah. Did Mark Meadows do it as well?
He took a bargain plea bargain late this afternoon.
Okay.
Yep, and
he's talked to
that the prosecutor, the guy. What the heck is his name? I can't remember what state he's out of.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, he's talked I can't think of his name, but three times he's talked to him. He did take a plea bargain.
If Mark Meadows, as President Trump's former chief of staff, has taken a plea bargain, it doesn't look – it's going to get interesting.
No,
I don't think it looks real good.
No, it's not looking good at all.
It looks like they're starting to turn. They're rats jumping a sinking ship from the looks of it. But we'll all have to see what their testimony ends up looking like, but – I can't see the government having accepted a plea bargain from them unless they knew that they had the goods that they were looking for. So I think it's going
to
be...
I'm trying to find a story right now about Mark Meadows.
Yeah, because I have not heard about that. I've been out there trying to freeze-proof the farm before we had this cold front hit this week. So I hadn't been online very much since I saw this morning's news.
So, ex-chief of staff Mark Meadows granted immunity, tells special counsel he warned Trump about 2020 claims. That's Jack Smith, Counsel Jack Smith. That's who he was dealing with there.
He accepted immunity.
Yes.
Oh, so he was not even a plea deal.
Testify against Trump. So... it's not looking good for Trump right now, legal-wise. When you got your own people, and especially close people, your attorneys and your chief of staff, they're turning against you and taking, you know, immunity or pleas or whatever you have, what have you, to testify against you. As much as I like Trump's policies and stuff, looking at this as just a person, this does not look good for him at all. I mean, this is bad news. So, like you said, it's one of those things. I hear everybody jump on the ship. He's going down now. Well, we've heard that for the last 3 years. So just calm down. Let's see how it plays out. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's all a little game that they play, and to keep us fighting amongst each other. We don't need to fight amongst each other. Let them handle their own stuff, and we'll handle our stuff, you know? So anyway, sorry. I just brought that story up.
And I was talking to a friend of mine earlier today, Charlie Kukins, who's actually running for as a Libertarian in a special election in the Minneapolis area on December the 5th. And we were talking a little bit about the Constitution and how important it is to remember the context of what was trying to be accomplished at the time that these amendments were passed. And I think the 14th is a prime example of what were they trying to accomplish. I mean, the first thing they were trying to accomplish is to make sure that all of the people, the freed slaves, had an opportunity to participate in voting and being a part of the United States as a citizen.
See, get confused, Bull, because, you know, the 14th Amendment, you know, granted them, you know, due process and allowed people to vote.
Yep.
But then you go to the 15th Amendment, which we're discussing kind of both of them tonight. The 15th Amendment granted African-American men the right to vote. So it's kind of the same thing, just worded differently.
Yeah, well, again, it specifies that. Because let's face it, I mean, in this time frame, with this this law, or with the First Amendment, all persons born or naturalized in the states are citizens. That included women. But women did not have the right to vote at this time.
No, that was
so
the ratification of the 19th Amendment.
Yep, just because you were a citizen, did not automatically, it was not a case where all citizens were allowed to vote. You were a citizen, but then you didn't necessarily have that privilege. That wasn't enshrined as a right, I guess you could say.
But also, the 15th
Amendment came up. Go ahead.
The 15th Amendment effectively enfranchised African American men while denying the right to vote to women of all colors. Women did not receive the right to vote until the ratification of the 19th Amendment in 1920. So I was right on the 1920 mark. So, yeah, women didn't have a right to vote until 1920. But in 1870, when they ratified the 15th Amendment, that's when African-American men were allowed to vote. And then the 14th Amendment, they were kind of setting themselves up to put the 15th Amendment into place with the wording of that one, due process, and basically – getting rid of segregation in some sense. I mean, I know that didn't happen until, you know, the Civil Rights Movement, but this all set all of that up, you know, eventually. So, yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yep. And I guess with the 14th, what part of the intent was indeed to give them the right to vote. But right after they passed the 14th, they started hearing grumblings from different states who were going to try to prevent them from having those voting rights. And I guess that is kind of what lit the fire to say, okay, you know what? We have to go ahead and pass the 15th Amendment now to keep these people from doing something stupid. I mean, this is our intent, but people are, you know, like any time a law or a rule is passed that people don't like, they immediately start trying to figure out how to get around it. Well, after the 14th was passed, because remember, in the southern states, in order for them to get representatives back in Congress, they had to ratify the 14th Amendment. So it was basically your gun was being held to their head going, you either ratify this amendment or we don't seat your members in Congress and you have no say. So they ratified this, but it was kind of holding their nose because they really didn't want to. So as soon as they get in, now they're trying to figure out a way to get around it, and that's why the 15th Amendment got pushed and passed. So it's very important to see how all of these different steps here, or all these different sections of the 14th Amendment, was specifically made to bring all these southern states online and to prevent them from benefiting. I mean, that's why you have Section 3, which basically prevented anybody who had forsaken their oath, who had already swore an oath to the United States to if you violated that oath by rebellion or insurrection, by fighting for the South, then yes, you were going to be disqualified from running for office and holding office again, because it was pretty obvious that your word wasn't worth anything. It didn't mean anything. So, yeah, we're not going to give you a second chance. That's what Section 3 was all about. Section 4 is, again, it was basically to enforce that the debt that the North went into to fight the Civil War, that the South was going to have to, could not try to vote out and say, we're not going to pay these debts because this was against us. So it specifically said the validity of the public debt to the United States is beyond question. They can't come back and say, we're not going to pay this because this was used to fight against us. But at the same time, it also forbade any of the debts brought on by the Confederate states from being incurred by the United States. It said any loans y'all took or any debts y'all took to fight us as the winners, well, those people are shit out of luck because we're not picking up that bill. Even if we're picking up the states, the states are now coming back to the United States. That does not mean that the United States or even the citizen or the citizens of that state are going to be held accountable to this for this debt. So everything on here, although it taken individually looks like it could be something stand on your own, it was all about addressing the issues of the Civil War. One of the things we talked about with the 13th Amendment was how Congress had to pass the 13th Amendment to outlaw slavery, I mean, because Congress did not have the ability to pass a law to do so, because the Constitution did not give them that right. Well, look at Section 5. This now gave Congress that right in the future, that it did not have before this, by saying that Congress shall have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article, which are basically equal rights, equal protection of the laws. It leads to a couple questions in my mind. To me, when you read this, look at the 14th Amendment, was there a reason for the 19th Amendment? Or couldn't Congress have just passed a law based on Section 1 to say women had the right to vote? Did you actually need a new amendment to cover that? So I'm interested when we get to that amendment to do a little bit more reading onto it and to try to find out why exactly they felt that they needed an amendment for that and just passing a law wouldn't work. Because in my mind, between Section 5 and Section 1, they should have been able to do that.
I have a lot of questions about the Constitution, honestly.
I think we all do. And it's like we sit here and we try to we talk ourselves through it, trying to understand a lot of it. But again, there are still, I mean, let's face it, there are legal scholars who do nothing but study and the Constitution and stuff like that. And even they have disagreements on how things go and how things should be interpreted and the reasoning for it and so forth.
I was listening to a Twitter space earlier. I do that when I'm driving down the road. I'll flip on Twitter and I'll go to a Twitter space just to listen through my Bluetooth going down the road. And somebody was on there talking about Thomas Massie, Representative Thomas Massie, and yep, how impressed they are with that guy because he is all the time, he is looking, reading the Constitution. That's what he does in his spare time. He is always reading the Constitution. Now, anybody, and I know you like Thomas Massie. I do as well. I think he's a fair and honest man. But any of your representatives that take the time to actually read the Constitution while they're serving you, that's probably a representative that you want to keep voting for, unless they're being blatantly obvious about corruption or something. But that I was very impressed when I heard that. I'm like, wow, that just impresses me more about the guy. So I just thought I'd just add that little tidbit in there.
Now, here's probably the case that's most often brought up when we talk about the 14th Amendment. It's from 1896, Plessy versus Ferguson. And in this case, my home state, Louisiana, passed a law requiring black and white residents to ride separate but equal train cars. In 1892, Louisiana police arrested Homer Adolph Plessy, who was 7/8 Caucasian, for taking a seat in a train car reserved for whites only, because he refused to move to a separate train car reserved for blacks. Now, keep in mind, again, he was only 1/8 black. And again, they were saying, well, you're not white enough. Plessy argued that Louisiana statute violated the 13th and 14th Amendments by treating black Americans inferior to whites. Plessy lost in every court in Louisiana before appealing to the Supreme Court in 1896. And in a 7-1 decision, the court held that as long as the facilities were equal, their separation satisfied the 14th Amendment. And at that point, the only person who disagreed was Justice John Marshall, who basically passively said, hey, you know, the Constitution is meant to be colorblind. And, of course, this Plessy versus Ferguson was eventually overturned. But it is kind of interesting to see how the mindset went from that time period. Where, you know what, as long as they're equal, you can still require them to be separate.
Kind of fast forward to that, to the civil rights movement with Rosa Parks then.
Exactly. And that was one of the big ones that, the big follow-ons to that was, of course, Brown versus the Board of Education from 1954. Which is basically, at that time, again, segregation of public schools based on race was allowed by the states if they were equal, according to Plessy versus Ferguson. But Brown is the one that finally overturned that decision, basically stating that regardless of the equality of facilities, the court ruled that separate is inherently unequal. Thus, public school segregation based on race was a violation of the 14th Amendment. I mean, it kind of bothers me that it took 60 years for the Supreme Court to finally come back and correct that. But that is probably one of the most important, in my mind anyway, one of the most important 14th Amendment cases. Because, again, it finally said, you know what, no, if you're going to have something separate, then there's no way they're going to be equal. It's impossible. Which was, I mean, one of those things that was a common sense thought as a process. I mean, even at that time, you look at what was reserved for whites compared to what was reserved for blacks, and there was a huge difference. So there's no way anybody could really look at this and say these were equal. I'm trying to see what other...
I was just looking up some of these court cases for the 15th Amendment, and I understand we're kind of jumping back and forth here, ladies and gentlemen, but they both have basically the same intent in some sense. And like Bull explained that earlier, they had to create the 15th because they were trying to get around the 14th Amendment. But the 15th Amendment, you know, so like I come across, and the 15th Amendment, just to remind you, it was that was to give African-American males the right to vote. Not any women of any color, but just African-American males the right to vote. And all these states that ratified the 15th Amendment, but the first 28 states, I was surprised to see West Virginia was number 2 because that was a southern state. Louisiana was number 5. Arkansas was number 10. South Carolina, 11. But otherwise, a lot of them were, you know, Midwestern states. So that kind of surprised me about that, because I know the South was very, very, very deeply divided racially and still is in some parts today. I know that for a fact. I've got friends down. Well, you come from Louisiana, do you, Bull?
Yep, that's what I said. That's where I'm originally from.
Yeah. You know, up until the 90s, and go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, no, I was just going to go over another case. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Ladies and gentlemen, if it sounds like we're trying to talk over each other, we have this two-second delay in here, and it's absolutely annoying as hell because Bull will be right in the middle of talking, and I'll jump in with something, and then he'll start talking again. But he'd already started talking. I just didn't get it because of that stupid delay, and vice versa. So we're not trying to talk over each other. We're not trying to be rude toward each other or you. But, yeah, that's just an explanation of what we're dealing with here. But go ahead, Bull. I didn't have nothing important to say.
Oh, no. No, another case that we hear a lot, especially on the 14th Amendment, was Regents of the University of California versus Bakke. In this case, this guy, a white man, had been denied access to University of California Medical School at Davis on two separate occasions. The medical school set aside 16 spots for minority candidates in an attempt to address unfair minority exclusion from medical school at earlier times. Well, Bakke basically contested that his exclusion from getting into medical school was entirely as a result of his race, because those 16 spots were reserved for a minority, and he thought that was special treatment. The Supreme Court did come back and agree with him, and this is basically the Supreme Court ruling that stated that strict quotas were illegal, were a violation. They did, however, state that that race could be one of the factors used, but it was the strict use of racial quotas is what violated the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. So they could basically say, you know what, I mean, our percentages of blacks coming to school is less than our population percentage, and we're going to get favorable preference if you are black, because we want to be closer to that. But they cannot reserve, say, 30 if the population is 30% black, they cannot reserve 30% of the slots for black people only, or for a specific minority. But they could use that race trying to shoot for that number, if that makes any sense.
Just a reminder to everybody, if you're listening and you have something that you'd like to add to this conversation, we do have a live chat feature. If you click on the link that was shared out, you can go into the chat feature and ask a question, or you can call our guest call-in number and come live on air and ask Bull a question or ask me a question. And it doesn't necessarily have to be about the 14th or the 15th Amendment. Can be about any of the constitutional amendments that we've talked to up until the 15th, and any of them after that, too, we haven't discussed yet, but I'm sure we can get into a discussion. But the guest call-in number is 516-387-1733. And when you get through and you hear us on your phone, just press that number 1. It's not going to ask you to, but just go ahead and press the number 1. That way it lets me know on my switchboard that you want to get live on air with us and ask a question or join into the conversation. You may have an opinion about something. You're perfectly welcome, or more than welcome, to join the conversation. And again, that phone number, and type this in your phone and save it in your phone as the radio show, because these are good for all. This number is good for all the radio shows I do. The number is 516-387-1733. And again, just make sure you press that number 1. And again, we also have that live chat feature if you'd rather not come live on air. So I just wanted to throw that out there real quick for you guys, and we will continue on with the conversation. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay. Again, there are so many of these cases in the 14th that are just huge as far as the way we live our lives today. One of the other ones we hear about is Griswold versus Connecticut, which is from 1965. And this was a case where in Connecticut, they basically outlawed any kind of contraceptive. There was a Planned Parenthood clinic there who was basically doing counseling on contraceptives. And you had this married couple that was basically using them and basically were found to be breaking the Connecticut law.
So when the case was argued in the Supreme Court, their lawyers basically contended that, hey, that law deprived both defendants and the clinic's patients the rights based on the 14th Amendment due process clause. Meanwhile, the state claimed it did have a compelling interest in denying even married couples access to birth control because they needed to ensure their own continuality. Basically, the state said, we can prevent people from doing birth control because we need the people. We need the tax base, is basically what it came down to. And in a 7-2 ruling, the Supreme Court did come back and say that law was unconstitutional because one of the key rights that was expected is a right to privacy. And in that right to privacy was the right of married couples to make personal and private decisions about when to use contraceptive. And the not allowing the people in Connecticut that right, they came back and said, no, that's wrong. And so the state cannot get involved in this. Again, and one of the reasons why this one is so important is Griswold in Connecticut was basically some of the cases that was later used to overturn abortion for Roe versus Wade. It was also what was used to for Obergefell v. Holmes, which was the right for gay marriage. And it's the case that really, once Roe versus Wade was overturned, the big fear now in many communities is the fact that if they overturned Roe versus Wade, could they now go back and overturn Griswold versus Connecticut? Because by overturning that is the case where so many other cases regarding the 14th Amendment, was used to justify Griswold versus Connecticut. Again, it was that right to privacy that they talk about in that case. That not only that, but I almost forgot about Loving versus Virginia. Loving versus Virginia was the case that again they used that same Griswold versus Connecticut to allow interracial marriage because there was actually a Racial Integrity Act of 1924 that prohibited marriage between the races. And that was on the books as late as 1960s until it was overturned by Loving versus Virginia, which again used the 14th Amendment and Griswold as the basis for overturning that ban.
Hey, Bull, we got a caller if you'd like to take one.
Oh, by all means.
Okay, 2982, we're going to bring you on. 2982, you are on the air with Travis Bull Johnson and Jeremy. How are you today?
I'm doing just fine. How are you gentlemen this evening?
Great. What would you like to add to the conversation, my friend?
So I called, it was a few weeks ago, and probably about a month ago, you guys were talking about the state being able to bring a federal case against the state and what was that, the 11th? No. I'm not really positive which one it was, but in that spiel you guys talked, I didn't get to push one and call in at that point in time, but what the point of the matter I was trying to make was when everybody interprets things and uses that word interpret the law, isn't that to mean to just go by the definition of the word of the law? And that's why legalese was kind of created. So when we talk about these things, we can't interpret them in any other way than what they were meant at the time. We have to go back in time to the definition of the words at that time, don't we?
Well, and that's an interesting concept, because I think you need to be able to use that, but you can't go do it strictly. A prime example is used now by the left with the second, say for case, the Second Amendment. As the Second Amendment, what was the meaning of a firearm? It was a musket. So does that mean
right.
that only protected muskets? Because at that time,
true.
That's what they were. So, I mean, so there is a slippery path when you start looking at that, because then the rulings don't progress with the time, or the amendment doesn't progress with the time. It would only be, okay, this is the law at this very moment, but in 20 years, does that mean this law no longer means the same thing? Because in that time, you've had advancements. Has anything changed? Does that mean
well,
it's
that's
no longer?
Kind of going along the lines of my reason for calling in the first place. I'm a wholesale cannabis growing supply distributor in Minnesota now. And I've been down to the Capitol. I was down in 2019 and found out I'm no good at talking to arrogant politicians in their offices. I'm just not that guy. But I am the guy that is willing to back people and willing to, you know, get out there and tell my story when it comes down to it. But the way I see things is that this basically pertains to every law written, but especially to, like, the laws on cannabis and how, you know, the federal government is looking at changing it and how the states are changing. And, I mean, we were the 23rd state here in Minnesota. I mean, that's almost half the states are recreational or medicinal use. Shouldn't that be, you know, something to change that law that was made back in 1972?
Yep.
Going as the, I mean, isn't that something that needs to be looked at and adjusted?
I understand
there are bigger fish to fry at the time, but there are still other fish to fry too, you know?
No, I think so. And one of the problems we run into is the when it comes down to the federal government side on stuff like cannabis, is the Commerce Clause. Unfortunately, that they have taken that Commerce Clause and basically said, hey, basically anything to do with money and commerce between states, we have jurisdiction over, despite what the states may decide to do or not to do. And this is the problem we're running into with cannabis, with it still being a Schedule One, I believe,
yep.
drug they consider it. I mean, because it does interfere with a lot of people's ability to do business, because it restricts their access to, as you know, to banking and so forth. I've got
immensely
some real good friends who have stores that sell cannabis. I mean, and use, even things using credit cards has been a challenge for them, based
right.
off of the federal government's restrictions.
Even with our company name, we cannot get a bank account, and we don't
yep.
even deal with anything with flour or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, and so that's kind of the challenge. But I definitely, but I do agree with what you were saying earlier, that you do need to take into account the reasoning or the thought behind the law when it was written.
Right.
Again, when we like I mentioned the Second Amendment earlier. Yes, at that
yep,
time,
definitely.
Second Amendment was they were talking about muskets. But no, they weren't really. What they were really talking about was a person's ability to hold government accountable via weapons.
To defend themselves.
To defend
in any way,
themselves.
Shape, and or
That's
form.
What they were really talking about, not what a weapon was at that time.
Yep,
and
exactly.
That's where you get that's where you get into your fight when you start talking about interpretation, interpreting the law, interpreting the Constitution, is what did they – we're not there 250 years ago. What did they really mean? What were they really looking to do? Even language.
Exactly.
Language has changed.
That's the common sense part of it that needs to be
exactly.
listened to, not the main, you know,
yep.
discussion.
And that's
what you have to be able to reverse, or not reverse, but remove yourself from and look at the whole situation rather than just points,
yep.
I guess.
Yeah, I think that's one of some of the things me and Jeremy try to do each time we look at one of these amendments, like the 11th, which was the one I think you were talking about earlier, is we have to look at it and go, okay, what was the intent? What did they want to do or say in this law? But we also have to take into consideration the changes. Like again, let's go back to the Second Amendment, just because that's
right.
one of my favorite ones to talk about.
Exactly.
Second Amendment was, again, meant to restrict the federal government from getting involved in gun ownership.
Yep.
But the 14th changed that 100 years later by stating the states had to follow the same rules as the federal government did.
Well,
wasn't the original intent of the framers of the Constitution. They didn't want to limit the states. They wanted to give the states these rights. And they just wanted to make sure the federal government didn't get involved and in a way that let the federal government take over the states. That's what their goal was to keep federal government as being the minority partner.
Well, how about
and
if we look
right.
at the First Amendment?
Yeah, upside down with the 14th.
Look at the First Amendment for 1 second. Freedom of speech, right?
Yep.
They just sent a guy to prison for 60 days having to do with January 6th. He was never there. He just spoke his mind about it, and the government didn't like it, so they found him guilty of basically freedom of speech. They didn't like what he was saying, criticizing the government. Or it's almost like questioning the 2020 election, even though in 2016 the other side did the same thing, you know. So where does our freedom of speech start, and where does our freedom of speech stop? In my humble opinion, our freedom of speech stops when you are threatening somebody with your speech, like physical harm or
fighting,
you know, abuse. That can be interpreted many ways too. Well, I got freedom of speech. I can say whatever I want, whenever I want. Well, kind of, but when you're threatening somebody, you know, that's different.
Just because you have a freedom of speech doesn't mean you have a freedom of the consequences resulting from your speech.
Right, exactly.
Right.
There are still consequences that come with everything.
Right.
You
can't be trying to get to incite a riot or something like that with your speech. I mean, yeah, then you're inciting a riot. Okay, well, then your freedom of speech, you can say it all you want, but you're going to be held accountable if you're inciting something. But there's a lot of back and forth between both sides. The political atmosphere in this country is volatile right now, and it's absolutely horrible. And one side points the finger at the other side while both sides are doing the same damn thing. And it's like, when does the madness stop? When do we all together collectively say, okay, hey, enough's enough. Yes, you have a right to free speech. However, you can't say that.
You're probably
not noticing
they're all arguing for the same thing. They're just bickering about the earmarks.
Bingo.
Yeah.
So here's the question. My question for you, Jeremy. When we start talking about the First Amendment and freedom of speech, where does the line stop when it comes down to your freedom to tell a lie? Or your
lying
freedom
to tell
a lie. But
I'm a fairly brutally
lying,
honest
lying
person.
It's fraud.
No, but my question is who knows the real truth? Do they have documents to back this up? Do they have proof to back whatever they're saying up? And when they do have proof, I have noticed that that's not coming from a reliable source, or that hasn't been proven. or
yeah.
they've been that's been
well,
debunked.
And that's where I guess a lot of the questions come into is when it comes down to lying for something that lie is it lying is it or is it opinions?
Well, I have a perfect example for you. I can
yep.
give you a perfect example.
I got one on this. So
I was banned off of social media during the pandemic because I was very vocal about the treatment for COVID-19 and the vaccinations that they were pushing, which caused a red flag with me, and I started doing some just random digging. I started looking into Fauci. I looked into all sorts of stuff. And I was banned because I put on Facebook. That was my first warning, and then I kept it up because I don't shut my mouth, but because when I'm right, I'm right. But I read a study done in the Congo in 2018 involving remdesivir. And anybody that was administered remdesivir died and it treated the Ebola virus. They were testing it to treat the Ebola virus. But 32.3% of the people administered remdesivir died of renal failure or other major organ failure. And what did they do during the pandemic? They used remdesivir as one of the official treatments. Meanwhile, they took off ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, both proven methods of treating a parasitic virus that has worked for years. And as a matter of fact, ivermectin has won the Nobel Peace Prize. So when I started looking at some of this, I thought, wow, this is really strange why they're doing this. But I got banned for it. And one of the things, is I was very vocal about there's something going on with these vaccines. I can't quite put my finger on it. I'm no medical professional, but something's not right. They don't offer you a free hamburger and fries. They don't have $1 million lotteries. They don't have give you 12 packs of beer for something that's going to
exactly.
save your life. They don't need to coerce or force you to take something like that. Well, guess what came out? I think it was today or yesterday in Canada. That they found that there's actual poison in these vaccines that causes a rapid form of cancer to grow. And I sat back in my truck chair. I was driving down the road, and I thought, holy crap, I've just been vindicated. Like, I literally have been vindicated. The only problem with that is nobody will ever know except for me that I was vindicated because I was banned, and they couldn't hear anything that I was trying to warn them about. I mean, the people that know me know. But that's a perfect example of free speech. They said I didn't have the right to say that. I was questioning things. It's all I did, except remdesivir. I said, I read that study. I shared the study, and a fact checker come up and said, false information. I'm like, it's a study done by the NIH by Dr. Fauci. How is that false information?
Right, yep.
It's just their literal study. So how can you tell me that? And they've done that to me numerous times through this. Some of the stuff, maybe I've been really, maybe not quite on, but almost there? Yeah, okay. I'll give them that. But this I was on. I was spot on. And I shared the receipts. And I still got banned. And now I'm vindicated. Do I get my old account back? No. Do I get a sorry? No. No. Well, sorry about that. Well, we ruined your life for what I didn't ruin my life. But, I mean, it sucked because I lost a lot of contacts when they banned my Facebook account. But I think that's a pretty good example. I'll go ahead and the caller, go ahead. I know you had an example you wanted to share.
The example is what chased me out of the Senate office building. I was standing there and told the senator straight out, you know, peanuts are more dangerous than pot. And he looks at me and goes, prove it. I said, okay. Somebody can smell a peanut butter jar and go into anaphylactic shock, basically. And I've never heard of a person, you know, smoking cannabis and having any remotely close reaction to anything that resemble that. And he goes, prove it. I said, I just did. And he goes, no, you didn't. And I asked him why. And he gave me some rigmarole, and I said, so anyways, here, let's do this. The only people that I've ever heard of killed over cannabis are in a drug raid where the government, which would be you, have shot people or shot at people, creating a hostile environment or a moment. So in other words, you killed the people, not the cannabis. And he got visibly upset when I stated that.
I'm going to take a guess and state this guy was probably a Republican.
I'm not saying this law or anything, or it was a House member or anything, but he was a very young fellow in comparison, and his cognitive dissonance, I suppose, would be the best way to put it, was
look,
absolutely.
I understand
terrible.
Exactly what you're saying, because I had a similar conversation with a state representative, Gruenhagen, Republican, within this district. And it was very obvious, because at the time I was running for U.S. Congress under legal marijuana now.
Right, right.
And when I spoke with him, I mean, it was very obvious he was repeating things verbatim that were given to him by a lobbyist. And I would knock these things down that he would say one thing at a time. I mean, he would keep on talking about, oh, it's bad for kids, it's bad for kids. And I'd be like, who in the hell is trying to legalize it for kids? Nobody. Why do you keep on saying how it's bad for kids? I'll admit,
right.
You know what? It does negatively affect adolescents' brains. So, no, we should definitely not allow kids to buy it or smoke it. But that's not
right.
What we're talking about legalizing.
Exactly.
But that was,
so
that
do you
was,
guys remember – oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead, man. Go ahead.
The Star Tribune back in 2020, I believe it was, the headline that read legalized cannabis off the table for now or whatever, and there was like four pictures. It's kind of a big deal. And I was in the top left picture staring at a guy who was sent from Colorado or had his information from Colorado stating that for every dollar that they brought in, they had to spend $4 to recoup the negative effects. And that was a moment where lying and opinion came into my brain at that moment. And it's like, who's thinking that these moments are negative, you know, what makes it negative, you know, what's going on here, you know, and who's spending this money and, you know, where's it coming from and why is it being spent? Is it being spent on propaganda, still trying to fight something that you've already lost the war to? And if that's it, why are you doing it? You know, it's things along those lines that government has an issue with, I see. It's things I like to bring up and talk about, I guess.
Yep.
But other than that, I'm done. And you gentlemen, thank you very much for what you do. I'm very much a constitutionalist, kind of a radical centrist of sorts,
yeah.
If you want to put a label on me. I don't really fit into a box very well. So.
Well, that's what I like is when you don't, because I don't either.
I'm going to put a label on you, and I'm sure you're going to appreciate it. You're a God-fearing American. How about that?
Yeah. I'm a something-fearing American. We can put it that way.
Okay. You're an American. How's that? There we go. I'll put it in simple terms. Hey, thanks for calling in, and we sure appreciate your thoughts and your opinions on stuff. And keep on listening and share us out if you can. We do appreciate it. Well, thank you very much.
Definitely. You guys have yourself
a
wonderful
day. Thank you, sir, and good luck with your business.
I will. Thank you.
Bye. All right. Okay. All right. Well, that's always nice to get a caller in and share different thoughts and opinions and ask logical questions and legitimate questions, and we can have a conversation, all three of us.
Yep.
You know, that's what the beautiful thing about having just a civil discussion about things is. We might disagree on things, but can't we talk about it and discuss it? I don't know. Apparently we can't do that anymore, but whatever.
Yeah.
But we did tonight, and that's all that matters. Well, we are wrapping up. We are at our finish mark. You made it through a race for once, Travis, and I barely made it through a race tonight. So I guess we're 1-1. What would you like to say in closing?
I would like to say, I mean, again, thanks everybody for tuning in, and I mean, the more we talk about the Constitution, the better. And I think this is across all aspects, because so much right now is taught of this is what happened, but nothing really goes into the whys. Nothing really goes into what was the thought process. No, there's no context being given. And I think that's what something that's very important for us to do is to do that is talk, and talk about the context. What were they trying to accomplish? What was the spirit of what they were doing? Because if we can understand the spirit, then we can kind of get a little bit better understanding of what the reasoning was. And the 14th, I think, is a prime example. I mean, there's very few amendments, I think, outside the Bill of Rights that has more of an impact on our lives even today than the 14th Amendment does. And I think we owe it to ourselves to actually learn what that means, learn what the reasoning was and the process and the impact. Because, again, it probably had more to do with the expanding of the power of the federal government than any other amendment. But the truth of the matter is, the reason it did is because states weren't always taking care of business and doing the right thing. So part of it, I guess, we caused ourselves. But I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in, and I'd like to thank our caller. It's very important for us to get these callers and get these other perspectives in, and we very much appreciate them.
Yeah, no, and that we do appreciate callers. And again, even if you aren't in agreement with us and you're sitting over there shaking your head, listening to your phone, call in. Let's talk. Let's have a discussion. We don't have to yell and scream and call each other names. Let's just talk about it. And we can do that civilly. We're adults, right? So, again, that call-in number is 516-387-1733. That phone number is valid every single week, every Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Central. And you know, there was a while there, me and Bull, we just got so busy with life, we weren't able to get on every week, and I called Bull up once. I said, you know, we got to do whatever we can just to keep this on every Tuesday night so people can get a sense of normalcy that we're going to be, oh, yep, they're going to be there. And tonight was one of those nights where I was like, oh, my God, I can't do this. But, hey, I walked in my door with 30 seconds to spare, and we made the show happen. Was it the best quality? I don't know. That's up to you to judge. But the main point that we do this show is we're the Constitutional Republic Party. We're trying to earn your votes, trying to change things from within, do it the right way, and let's discuss the Constitution together so we all learn together. That's the best. It's an educational tool. Why not use it? One thing before we go, I want you guys all to just keep on paying attention to the Speaker of the House debacle that's going on, because that is a complete mess. I've been watching that all afternoon and into right before I got home. I was listening to some Twitter spaces all afternoon, and holy Mother Teresa, yeah. That is crazy.
So why did Emmer step down? It sounded like he
couldn't get
won.
The votes. No,
yeah,
couldn't get
the Democrats
votes.
The Democrats said they weren't going to vote, so it would have lowered it to only needing like 190.
Well, Donald Trump.
Democrats are willing to say, you know what, this isn't our fight. We'll back off so that we can get somebody in without having to actually vote for them.
Well, Trump made a post on Truth Social about how Tom Emmer is a rhino and blah, 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 and he sent it to every member of the House, of the GOP House, I should say. So I don't know if that had any influence on it. I don't know. I just know that happened. There are so many things that happened today. I could do a whole separate radio show talking about all of it, and it would last for 5 hours. And that literally.
Well, I guess I know what you're doing tomorrow.
Last 5 hours, that's all I've been doing is listening to Twitter spaces and trying to find out, get the inside scoop. Because the people on Twitter spaces, like Matt Gaetz will sometimes jump into one of these. Carolina Bonita, who's a freedom fighter. I met her down at the People's Convoy. She's involved with a lot of people that you know of, and yeah, you know. And she's a friend of mine. I texted her tonight and let her know that I got my old Twitter account back because of my big Twitter account got banned. But no, there's a lot of influential people that get on these Twitter spaces, and I like to jump into those, and I like to listen to what they have to say, and because they have inside information. Like a couple of those guys were standing right outside of what's that Republican that lied about? He's in Congress. He lied about all this stuff just to get elected, and now he's under investigation. I know you know who I'm talking about from New York. If I could. Anyway. Yes.
Santos.
Yes, that guy. One of these guys that were on this Twitter space today were standing right outside his office, and the only reason you stand outside his office is, well, that's the only phone reception he could get. So when I tell you I listen to Twitter spaces, you think, oh, big deal. It's like listening to a Facebook Live. Well, not really, because the Twitter spaces are very – people that are on the up and up, and they have – like they know what they're talking about politically wise, and they have numerous contacts, and – It's very interesting. Let me just put it that way. I don't want to carry on. But I definitely will keep on paying attention. I don't think I'm going to do any radio shows after this one until Thursday, but who knows? I might get a wild hair up my rear end and do something. But it all depends. I'm probably going to go back to listen to Twitter Spaces tonight because they're still in they were still in negotiations when I got off, and I don't know if they quit for the night or what, but I like to keep up on that stuff for some reason. But anyway,
yeah,
just pay attention to that, ladies
Jeremy
and gentlemen.
Munson. Yeah, I was just looking at something from Jeremy Munson that had said that Emmer had withdrew at like 3:30 this afternoon. I didn't even know that. As I said, I've been out working on the farm all day, and now I'm just trying to catch up. And every time I look online and see something, I'm like, crap, I didn't – what else did I miss today?
Oh, dude, it was a busy day political-wise. I mean, with the people going after turning on Trump, and it's just crazy. My mind is still reeling, like, holy Lord, man. You can't keep all this stuff straight. But, yeah, I don't know when Trump did that post on Truth Social, if it was before or after Emmer's dropped out, but I just know that Emmer's he just couldn't get the votes.
Yep.
And I'm on the fence with Emmer. You know, I know he's here from Minnesota, but I have some of the stuff that he's done, it almost seems like he's from the Delano area. And
yep.
And it makes me think that, you know, was he using Republican in name to get elected? Because he knew that, you know, that district is, there's a lot of Trump supporters in that district. But then again, he didn't support Trump. So I don't know. I don't know. I'm just a guy that has an opinion, okay? I have some facts, but I have an opinion. But anyway, we'll talk about that on we'll get into some of this stuff, especially when they pick a speaker of a house, of the house, and we don't mind talking about politics because it all, you know, if we have to, as long as we can do it civilly, you know, why not? But
yep.
But I just wanted you guys to, I wanted to mention, please keep an eye on that, just, you know, so you're informed of what's happening and why it's happening. But anyway, thank you to the caller. Thank you both for coming on every week and being loyal to the constitutionalist and trying to learn with the public like I am. And even though you know a lot more than I do, but hey, I'm learning.
I wouldn't
stuff
say
and
that.
It's certain areas, but it doesn't matter. It everything that we do and we talk about, everybody gets to learn something new. Even if I only take one thing away, or if I take 20 things away, that's all it's all about. All about, sorry. Anyway, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to end the 15th episode of The Constitutionalist, and we will be back here next week for the 16th Amendment, and you're going to love this one, because this one might get people a little fired up. And because I've got a little comparison involving the Federal Reserve. Anyway, I will talk to you guys, or we will talk to you guys next Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Central Time. I hope you all have a great week, and just try to make life the best of life, man. This is one shot. See you next Tuesday, guys.